You are listening to an exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News. In today's podcast, Dr. Blevins discusses two recent cases of diabetes insipidus. Here's Dr. Blevins.
Good afternoon. This is Dr. Lewis Blevins of Pituitary World News podcasting to you today from the coast of California. I'm just back from a walk by the sea, and on the walk I was looking at all of this water and thinking about the salt in the water and our bodies and our own salt and water composition and how disease states can affect that and in turn can lead to serious problems. All the while, of course, I was thinking about a few recent patients that I'd heard about, and I'll share those with you. They're patients with diabetes insipidus. But before I do that, I'll share with you a funny story about how the water that we drink must be the right water. So I was along the tide pools with my daughter's Chihuahua probably 6 to 8 months ago or so, and she was along there with me, and obviously it was a warm day and she was thirsty, so she stopped to get a drink of water. To her, it looked great. You know, of course, it was salt water because it was in a tide pool. And it was just hilarious to watch her take a few laps of that water and then to spend probably the next 3 or 4 minutes trying to get the taste of the salt out of her mouth. So it reminded me that when we are thirsty, we truly have to have water that has a tolerable or acceptable amount of different electrolytes and minerals. So let's talk about these patients. And while I think about title for this podcast, I think I would call this one, I Learned About Diabetes Insipidus From That. And of course, I didn't learn anything about these patients that I heard about that I didn't already know, but the physicians who were managing them learned about diabetes insipidus from the circumstances and the recommendations that I had had regarding their patients. And, of course, the reason I want to share this with you folks is that this is information that you can use going forward through life and interfacing with healthcare professionals and institutions to ensure that people take better care of you if you have diabetes insipidus. Now, the first patient was a middle-aged gentleman who had presented with a sudden onset of polyuria. There was no slow onset. It just, he woke up one day and he was urinating excessively and went to see a physician for evaluation, and they thought he had prostate disease. So he underwent a number of different investigations and was found to have nothing wrong with his prostate gland whatsoever. Of course, when he was urinating, he also complained of thirst and the excessive ingestion of water. At one point, they tried to tell him he should cut down on his water intake and maybe he wouldn't pee so much. That obviously didn't work. When they had checked some routine laboratory studies, his sodium levels ranged between 145 to 150 milliequivalents per liter, and those are elevated results, indicative of a water deficiency or depletion state, if you will. So for several months, the patient was plagued by these symptoms and signs of thirst, polydipsia, and marked polyuria. And finally, they put a Foley catheter into the gentleman so that he wouldn't have to go to the bathroom all the time. And once the catheter was put in, he was able to quantify his urine output as averaging probably close to about 10 liters daily. Now, because of the extreme polyuria and serum sodium levels, they ultimately suspected he had pituitary disease, so they attained an MRI study and found that he had thickening of the pituitary stalk, suggesting that he had lymphocytic neuroinfundibulohypophysitis or some other disorder, and contacted me for advice. 3 months had passed, and he'd not received any vasopressin whatsoever, so that was obviously one of my first recommendations. And then subsequently, the recommendations were to focus on trying to obtain a diagnosis to figure out what was going on, and then furthermore, to further assess other pituitary functions to ensure that everything else was normal, because sometimes patients have hypopituitarism in this setting. I think this patient's story highlights the cardinal features of diabetes insipidus, which are thirst, polydipsia, and polyuria. And the polyuria is something that we can quantify. Any amount of urine that's more than 30 milliliters per kilogram of body weight is considered to be polyuric or excessive. And oftentimes physicians don't recognize that and won't take a look at the amount of urine that's being made in a patient who complains of polyuria. And of course, the primary problem is vasopressin deficiency that leads to the water loss at the level of the kidney and the polyuria, and then that leads to hyperosmolarity and thirst, which leads to increased water intake. I think the other lesson here is that vasopressin works, and this gentleman had reportedly obtained significant relief from a prescription of vasopressin. And hopefully his Foley catheter will be discontinued in the very near future. One of the bits of advice that he received that is probably intuitive to a lot of people, but counterproductive in patients with diabetes insipidus, is to limit his water intake and maybe he wouldn't pee so much. And that advice brings us to the second patient I'd heard about, who is a man who had presented with a supracellular mass and had polyuria and was admitted to the hospital to undergo surgery. They made him NPO, which means nothing by mouth, and his serum sodium level rose from about 142 to 149, and he became significantly more thirsty. And this is exactly what we see in patients who have diabetes insipidus. If you limit their access to water, or they have impaired consciousness or something else that makes it unable for them to ingest water, they will become more volume depleted, more dehydrated, and their serum sodium level will rise and they will become more thirsty. You need two things to manage this situation. First, vasopressin. The patient had not yet been treated with vasopressin. That was a recommendation of mine. The second is that if the patient's going to be kept NPO, they should receive IV fluids containing half normal saline or D5W as needed. And the target should be restoration of volume status and normalization of the serum sodium level and control of the polyuria. And when I say control of the polyuria, it's been demonstrated, and certainly my experience over the past more than a quarter of a century, that if you treat patients with diabetes insipidus to maintain a urine output somewhere around 3 liters a day, most people do very well. They can tolerate that amount of polyuria, and they have a very rare occasion of hyponatremia, if at all, with that degree of polyuria. I thought these were two very instructive patient stories and wanted to share those with you. I want to remind you, and especially those of you who are first encountering us at Pituitary World News, that we have other podcasts on diabetes insipidus, and we've written a host of articles that are on our web pages at pituitaryworldnews.com. Also, we conducted a survey that many of you participated in, and you can review those results through podcasts, and I think also a written document on our website. Feel free to send us questions or ideas for future podcasts. Thank you for listening. Once again, this is Dr. Lewis Blevins of Pituitary World News. Have a wonderful day.